Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist, and we come to you live every Thursday. Our normal time is from 7 p.m. until 8, and today we are coming in a little bit earlier, almost like the matinee show. We are a little bit early at 4:30. This still will be a one-hour show. Just think of it as a matinee. This is most likely a one-time, so if you'd like to call in, the phone number is 516-387-1640, and you know, the Creative Alchemist, this is the place where creativity and transformation comes together all as one with a single-minded focus on business. And you know, we talk to you about many topics. We always have a great guest who has expertise in specific areas. And we've looked at leadership and project management. We've done 401ks, accounting, finance, even looking at your health. We've had doctors. We've had lawyers. We've even talked about divorce. So we've covered many, many topics. We've looked at mortgages. We've had people come in and talk about their entrepreneurial experience and what it's like to start a business, going from having a job working in corporate America to then digital technology or marketing. So very good to hear people's experiences. Always good to be able to call in and ask them questions, because we're talking about your business, the business you'd like to start. Or the business that's not doing what you'd like it to do. So we are where, like I said, creativity, the creative, which is obvious, and alchemy. Alchemy is all about transformation. They say in the old days, the alchemist could literally transform lead into gold. It's a rumor. It's a maybe a myth. But that was all about being able to transform. And especially in this time of COVID and many other things happening, being able to creatively transform your business, people say pivot, this is the place to be able to engage us about creativity and transformation. So before we introduce our guest, we always have a guest.
Hey, Bill.
You have to know, I never take this journey alone. I have a co-host. Lori, let them know you're here.
Hi, everybody. It's Lori Miller from LGC Interior Design, and we're happy to be here this week. And we have a pretty important and special guest with a lot of information for you, helpful tips and tidbits. I believe Donald Gelestino is on the phone, or actually, he might be on his computer, and he's here. Donnie, you there?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thank you.
Oh, excellent.
Yes. Would you want to introduce yourself, tell people what you do?
Yeah, sure. Hi, my name's Don Gelestino. I'm the president and CEO of Champion Elevator. We're a full-service elevator company in the New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey area, a little bit into Philadelphia. We have over 5,000 elevators on monthly maintenance and over 300 employees.
Well, well done. Congratulations on that. 300 employees, that's, you know, that gets to be quite a bit to juggle. So great job on your part.
Thank you. Yeah, and we're only 6 years old, and we never had a loan line or credit limit or nothing like that. No bank borrowing or anything.
Interesting. So you didn't start out in the
and impressive
business, did you?
A lot of work.
A lot of work. And so, Ted, I didn't hear the question.
I was asking, did you start out in the elevator business?
Yeah, I actually started in 1986, and I started as a helper, worked my way up, as a mechanic and then a foreman, troubleshooter, supervisor, then engineer. And that took me up until 1993. And then I started a company called Vertec Elevator, which I had for 17 years. And then I sold that to United Technologies and went to work for them for a couple of years.
Interesting. So,
with them you had to sign a non-compete clause, I think I read.
I had a 5-year non-compete when I sold Vertec to United Technologies, and I stayed with them for 3 years. And you know, the big corporate world really is not for me. I went right from high school into the field. And, you know, I was a more work with your hands type guy than a textbook guy. So when I got over to United Technologies, you know, most of the people there were very corporate. Everyone had, you know, very good college education. And the one thing I noticed is the customer service and the culture wasn't even close to what I had with my old company. And that was what kind of inspired me to, you know, wait out my no-compete and open up Champion Elevator when my no-compete was out. And when I did that, I didn't go and take back old customers or anything, none of them. What I did do, though, is took a lot of my mechanics and supervisors' help with everybody because they had all left UTC and they were all working at tons of other companies. Because of the culture, and I put that team back together, and then we went and started, picking up elevator service contracts and modernization work. So it's a real grassroots, ground up company, Champion.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Is that it was grassroots?
He started from the very bottom as a helper, right? Isn't that what I heard you say? So you learn, you know, the entire business up and down and inside out. And that's, I can see how that would create a very different kind of culture because just for one, the guys who work for you are they know that you understand what they're doing. And what it takes to get the job done and any complexity they have to deal with. So a guy who works his way up to the top is seen a little bit differently than a guy who comes in at the top. Do you think that was part of what contributed to you being able to build a great culture?
I think that's part of it, but I think, you know what the other part is? The funny enough is I think about what these mechanics and helpers have to do every day, and because I've done it, and the company I worked with, you know, it was a very small company, non-union, didn't even have medical insurance type stuff back in the 80s, and you really had to do everything, and you really had a struggle. You know, probably had improper tools, not proper safety protocols, and you know, I look at what my people are doing, and I just every day hone in on how can I make this company the best it could be for them as employees? How can I make sure that they all go home at night and have the safest work environment? How can I make sure that they could get around the city, not in a junky old truck? You know, I get them brand-new trucks, retrofitted with all the right parts and tools, right up to date testing equipment, you know. So, you know, I just think of everything I do from a mechanic in the field's perspective and just say, what would be the best situation? And I just make it happen. And the people working really appreciate that. And, you know, we've done some acquisitions recently. And when you bring over people from other cultures, that's one of the hardest things, to integrate cultures. Elevator routes and, you know, some stuff like that is not such a big deal. But culture is very much a big deal when you do an acquisition of an elevator company and you bring in 25 guys and girls that never work together. And the good news is a lot of the people that come over to our company, it's like five steps up, like in their career. That now they went from a non-union shop to a union shop. They got benefits that they've never had. They got retirement that they never had. We give them, we take away an old vehicle that had 240,000 miles on it. We give them a brand new 2023 even vehicle that's coming out. Like, you know, and all of that, you know, that makes people want to do their best. And in turn, that's how our service that we provide really has become so valuable, where in 6 years you can have 5,000 elevators and 300 employees. People really start to feel the fire of doing the right thing when they're treated well.
That's well said. So I've never worked in the elevator industry. I worked in transportation and logistics. So, you know, we had trucks. And even for the operations people, when you make sure they have all the proper tools they need to get the job done, people tend to go the extra mile for you.
Yeah, 100%. Really, 100%. You know, and I, you know, it's funny. You hear the old cliche. I always hear this. I hear it every week. People say, oh, you know, you don't forget where you've come from, or, oh, like that guy forgot where he came from. And I don't know if I'm just blessed with the ability to not forget where I came from, but the times where I was working in the field with not the right tools and not the right, I mean, my story is very complicated, but I got to tell you, I don't think on my worst day I could forget what it's like to have really rough days. And you could really change someone's life by just doing the right thing, providing them the right opportunity, the right tools, the right safety equipment. And then it's really up to the individual. Like, what do they want to do? Do they want to just slack off, have a job, punch the clock in and out? Or do you want to make a career out of it that's going to provide your family with, you know, their schooling, their housing, their education, you know, after, you know, into college? And, you know, right up to my daughter just got married in September. Like, it was like, I'm very proud that I was able to throw her a good wedding, like, and stuff like that.
Right.
And I got to tell you, it's this, the elevator industry is a great industry. And if you have it as a job, it's a great job. But if you have it as a career, I got to tell you, it is an exceptional career opportunity. And, you know, and I never forget, like, you know, I was, it's kind of funny. I started out in the business in a very strange way. You know, I was 18 years old. You know, my parents moved to Maine when I was in high school, and I had to just go to Maine to finish high school, right? You're a 17-year-old kid. Your family moves. What are you going to really do? So
Right. The
crazy part is I went to Maine, finished high school. 2 weeks later, I actually left home with $21, and I literally ran away from home, came to New York, and, you know, it's going to be this rock and roll bass player. I had $21, a bass guitar, and a little bag of clothes. And there's where, you know, maybe I could have been born with a little more brains. You know, I got to New York and I realized, hey, holy smokes, I got no house. I got no real friends. My family's all gone. What am I doing? Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm sleeping at parks. I'm sleeping in cars, like literally people's cars I didn't know. And lo and behold, every now and then I would get a little job playing bass at a bar, you know, in Oceanside, New York, and make $20. So I could buy strings for $14. And
wow.
But that was the life. So funny enough, I had met these two big guys, big Irish guys, and they loved the idea that, you know, I was a bass player. One guy, you know, if you're with the band, you get to drink for free. So he liked that. And the brother was a bouncer. And, you know, when you're in the band, let's say all the girls like to hang out with you. So the bouncer guy liked that idea. So these guys actually invited me to sleep on their couch, which, trust me, I felt like I was at the Plaza from what I was doing. I'm telling you, it was like, wow. I could sleep on a, you know, a, probably about a $10 couch. So it was fake leather. It stuck to you like, you know, like I can't even tell you, it's my paper. And funny enough, though, they let me sleep there for 3 months. And they never asked for any money. They just loved going to the bar. Hey, I'm playing at this place. They would come show up. They would drink for free. They'd get in for free. And that was good. I guess that's good when you're a teenager, right? So funny enough, one day I was dead asleep and the one guy shakes me and he says, you got to come to work with us. And I said, what do you guys do? I know you're the bouncer and I know your brother there is a drinker. What's the story? And they said, my father owns an elevator company and we need a helper. And they dragged me to work. I had no clue what I was even going to do.
Right.
But
right.
once I actually got in the machine room and saw it and saw the elevator equipment, you know, I'm a guy that could tinker with things. You know, I used to fix my own amplifiers. When I was a kid, I'd build my own mini bikes, little stuff like that, you know. So I just said to them, if you guys ever need me, I'll come back again. And I got to tell you, that was 1986, and I could count the days on my hands that I missed work from then till now. So
wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's just
amazing. That's incredible. That's a great story.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, so I never forget those times. Whenever I try to build a system or a process, or even if I'm putting together a holiday party, I'm like, I know what we should do for these people, just something a little better, you know. And That's really the way we do our service, with our elevators.
There's a few things I want to discuss about your business, but just from a personal, when you left Maine, did your parents ever try to get you to come back when they knew you were in New York?
So the funny part is, so I actually had $1 that I was coming to New York with, and my father gave me a 20. And he said, I'll see you next week. And, you know, they thought I was probably just going away for the weekend, but I have not been back there. I mean, I've been back to visit, but I did not go back at all. I feel bad for my mother and my one sister was 2 years younger than me. And I felt bad for her because we were tight. I have other two, I'm the oldest of three. I mean, four. I have three younger sisters. And the two really younger ones, they were 8 and 6 years younger than me. But I do feel bad for my older sister. We had a great relationship. And my parents, you know, listen, I feel more bad for my mother because I know that's got to be like, you know, your first son or first kid in general just ups and flies out the door one day with, like, no notice. Going to the city back then, you know, with nothing. It has to be a little disturbing, but we never really spoke about it, even to this day, like, you know?
Okay.
Interesting.
I was just curious if they tried to get you back.
Yeah.
Lori, you were going to ask him something, Lori?
Yeah, I was, because it was very interesting to me. I was initially going to ask you if you are a union shop, and then... And you said that, you know, running a union shop and benefits. So, and a lot of business owners are very much against being a union shop. So I'm wondering how you came to that decision and what are the pitfalls of having a union shop versus what are the benefits?
Yeah, so the pitfall is definitely the cost. I'll tell you that's the only pitfall, because, you know, the upside is the way it works in the elevator business. A lot of, you know, merit shops or non-union shops, they spend a lot of time training their people. Their people get really good. Then their people want more money. Then they end up going into the union. So you have them a lot of times at borrowed time, right? So that's kind of a downfall of being a merit or non-union shop. Oh, eventually, the guys end up getting pulled into the union with bigger offers, better benefits, more vacation, more holiday. You know, they feel part of a bargained agreement where they have brotherhood and all that stuff. But the upside to it, so I was never a union. I was never in a union myself. The company I worked for was a merit shop, non-union shop. And I later on at Vertex, I took in a partner who was a union guy. And he knew a bunch of guys that wanted to come over to us to work, but we were non-union. So I just said, all right, if they're union, all right, let's join up. And I didn't know anything about it, but what I did learn was the quality of the workers were definitely very good. And the opportunity for education, you know, they have schooling, they have safety classes that the union gives. Our company also provides, you know, troubleshooting classes and in-house safety classes. We have a safety app that everyone has on their phone, and they take a class every day to, you know, just on safety.
Wow.
But the union, you know, listen, they all know, you know, if you're a non-union shop, you kind of don't know what kind of medical you're going to have tomorrow. You don't know if things get tight, the guy's going to take $5 away from you an hour just because, you know, they got to pay gas surcharges on deliveries. You never know. Here, the people, the field workers feel that they have a solid platform. They know what their benefits are for the next 3 years. They know what their increases are the next 3 years. They know, you know, how much is in their 401k or their retirement. And it just kind of helps them stay focused on, listen, it could be stay focused on taking your kids to the beach or riding around the block with your kid on a bicycle or painting your house. A lot of times, I think the security of knowing where you stand in your, from your life, like your income statement, I think that helps a lot of people. And I do think that the union kind of provides that, and it just lets guys and girls go and do what they got to do and function to that. You could kind of earmark, if you're good at your job, you're never going to be without a job in the elevator business. I would say that till the day I die. There's no doubt about it. There's not enough mechanics on the planet to take care of the amount of elevators, and especially...
Wow.
So you are golden.
Amazing.
If you're good, and to have that security backed up by, you know, a pension fund and this and that, I think it just really helps people manage their own lifestyle.
Yeah, I can see that, and job security.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, so I guess that was definitely one of my questions, you know, because I was a union employee at one point, and I saw the benefits of both, you know, and a lot of union employees just didn't want to work because they had the job security. But then there were those who were appreciative and was like, no, I want to, you know, I love what I do, so this is great. So that's why I was kind of, you know, going in that direction a little bit.
Yeah, the only downfall, it's kind of funny, we looked at trying to buy a company that was out in Georgia, and the guy, it was a merit shop, non-union. And funny enough, the gentleman who was looking to sell the company, I said, well, we'll come in and we're going to, you know, we'll give the guys better benefits. We'll get them in the union, blah, blah. And the guy was like, oh, no, no, no. He goes, I don't want my guys to start slowing down. So I couldn't wrap my head around it. I really couldn't. But the only rough part about a union employee is, if you got someone really hustling and someone kind of just, you know, moseying along, they're both making the same rate usually. And sometimes that could create someone to try to slow down a little more. But I really do believe it's in your DNA. Like if you're a good, hardworking person, you're going to do that if you're union, if you're non-union, if, you know, you're getting $2 an hour, you're getting $50 an hour. I think that's something that's in the DNA, but that's kind of like a little bit of a fallacy out there where people believe, union guys, you know, they may take, like you hear, oh, they take a break after their break, you know. Listen, I got 307 employees, 200 of them are probably union, and I got to tell you, I love 99.9% of them. I think they all work really hard, and I think, I got no problems with them out there in general. And, you know, I think the education that they are offered is another upside to, you know, being in the business. Like, you should learn as much as you can, and that's just another avenue to learn.
Very interesting.
So
now, go ahead, Ted.
No, go ahead. What were you to say? What?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'd like to, I know you have grassroots. You started at the bottom as a helper. I want to know what it was like for you going from, we understand the journey from helper to engineer. Now, help us understand the journey to entrepreneur. And I heard you say you had a partner. I want to know if you still have a partner. Just what was that like from, you know, you talk about being in the union and knowing how much you're going to make, right? So going from knowing what you're going to make to being an entrepreneur where, you know, you may not be guaranteed to make the same thing every week, especially if you want to make sure your people are paid. So what was that journey like? And did you have a partner in the beginning? Do you have one now? So just first, what was the journey going to entrepreneurship like?
Oh, so listen, if there was a term, I think forced entrepreneurship is probably what happened to me. So funny enough, the company that I went to work for in 1986, you know, I stayed with them for 7 years. I learned everything I could. And the company was in financial trouble, tax issues and everything. And so here I was. I had just got engaged, and the company starts getting rocky, right? Now, my wife and I both came from pretty much nothing. And we're paying for our own wedding. So, you know, I'm paying for my own wedding. I would go to the bank with my paycheck, and the bank manager, the teller would say, nope, can't cash this check. Go see the manager. Sometimes the manager would sign off, put his initials on it, and they would cash it. Other times, the bank manager would say, no, it's uncollected funds. We can't do nothing. Come back tomorrow or something. So crazy enough, I would take my paycheck, go home, put it in a cigar box, and I would go Friday nights. I would valet park cars at Beefsteak Charlie's in Brooklyn. Then Saturday during the day, I would build a deck or a roof or a patio block walkway. And then Saturday night, valet park cars again. Sunday, finished doing that deck or roof or walkway. Monday, come in, work Monday through Friday for the elevator company, including a lot of nights on call overtime, and couldn't cash my check. I did that for 6 months, no paycheck. And 2 weeks before my wedding, I actually went in, gave my notice to my boss. I went to the county clerk. I opened up Vertec Elevator. I got a copy of my insurance. And back then you had the fax machine. So I was able to program in fax numbers, and I took the phone book and I put in from A to Z every elevator company's fax number, and I faxed a letter with a copy of my insurance and a copy of my certificate of incorporation. And I said, on this day, I will be available for any troubleshooting or subcontracting work. And I faxed that thing to every elevator company for days. And I got married, walked down the aisle with no job, came back from my honeymoon, and the fax machine, people faxed back to me, oh, I got a cable job in Brooklyn. I got car door operators in the Bronx. And I took my wedding money. I bought a van, retrofitted it with shelves and bins and tools, used pretty much almost all of our wedding money, and told my wife, I said, I'm going out there. So it was just me with a van, doing like sometimes two or three guys work, the job was, but it was just me. And I did it and did it safely, got done. And I did that for a year. And then a funny thing happened. The only accountant I ever knew was the same accountant for my old company. And I gave him all my paperwork and said, you know, can you do my taxes? And he said to me, wow, you're doing okay. I said, how's George doing? How's Deco doing? And he said, oh, they padlocked the shop. They seized the bank account. They're operating the company out of a mechanic's house. They have the calls forwarded there. It's terrible. And I said, well, tell them if I could ever help them, let me know. Well, lo and behold, the guy called me. I did a job for him. He never paid me. But funny enough, I ended up buying that company. The first company I ever went and worked for, the two big guys' father, I actually bought their company, and that was 1993. And to this day, the father works for me at Champion Elevator. So those are the relationships I build. And I'll tell you, like, you didn't know what was going to happen. And take my word for it, I didn't know anything. I just knew that I had to work, and I just did it. I took that company. It had 125 elevators. I actually paid 6 to 9 times what I should have paid for it, but I didn't know. And it was like the guy said, this is how much I owe in taxes. That's what I need for the company, or I'm going to go to jail. And I said, all right. I said, that's the price of the company. And it took me 10 years of making payments to him to pay it off, but it got me my start. And I grew that company pretty big, and I took in a partner when I was looking to buy a company called Venus Elevator. They had a guy, one of their top guys, this guy Bill Kraft, probably one of the greatest elevator mechanics I ever met. He was approached by the owners to buy the company, and he didn't know anything about buying a company. He was a troubleshooter. So he called me because he knew I bought Deco. So he's like, oh, this guy must know how to buy companies. Maybe he'd want to partner with me. We looked under the hood, did our due diligence. I walked away from it. It was a lot of funny business I wasn't really interested in. You know, it would have upset my world, and I wanted to stay on my path. And he said, Don, I don't want to go back to work for these guys. You know, would you want to take me in? And you know what? I said, if you could run the service side of my business, and I'll run the modernization, repair, test, and inspections, and I'll grow the business, I'll bring you in 50-50. No funny, 50-50, there you go, right? I kind of knew at that point what I felt I could do with the business. And that company, we had it for 17 years. It got really big. My partner was pretty much ready to retire, which he didn't, but and we sold the company to United Technologies, and we did extremely well in 2010 with that sale. And when I went to work for them, the day I went to work for them, I would never, ever, I would have sworn on a stack of Bibles, no, I'm never going to have another elevator company. Maybe I'll do some consulting. And sure enough, after I worked for the big guy, I said, I can do this. I could do it faster. I could do it better. I could have a better culture. And I just waited out the no compete. I actually built a car wash in between so I didn't get myself in trouble with my no compete. But built a big car wash, one of the nicest ones in New York, and got that up and running in a little 2-year period. Knocked the building down, built a new building from the ground up, and got that running. Jumped the next day into the elevators, got the elevator company running. The second the elevator company was running, I sold the car wash, took that capital, reinvested it back into the elevator company. And, you know, we're really a success story in the elevator business. Like, you know, companies don't just pop up and have 5,000 buildings in 6 years and no bank,
right,
not even a line of credit, you know. So it's just and I couldn't do it. You know, it's all because of the team. Like, you know, I really have a great team, and I was very fortunate that when I told these people that I was going to come back into business, would you guys and girls think about coming to work with me again? And, you know, one of the biggest accolades I ever received in my life was one of the girls who worked with me all the way back to Deco. We've been working together for 30 years. She, at 39 years old, her husband had a heart attack, and she had 3 kids, and he passed away. So this is a single mom with 3 children working for United Technologies at a high-level position, greatest job possible. And I asked her, I said, will you come work for me? And I did not expect a yes, but I had to ask. And she just said, tell me the date. And I got to tell you,
wow,
that I felt like I was on fire. I got to tell you, I was from that split second, I was on a mission to build like the greatest elevator company. And who knows if you're the greatest elevator company. I just know we all do a really good job, and we,
right,
you know, so, but, you know, that's like what fuels your fire right there. You know, that's what
absolutely
does it for me.
Great story. I want to go back to your partner. Like, we have a lot of people who listen and they either have a business or they like start one. Would you recommend, do you think having a partner is a good idea?
So, you know, when you look at it, like having the partner afforded me the opportunities to take a certain part of the business and hand it off to someone who was the greatest at that. Like, that's huge. And it afforded me to grow the business and him to grow it with me. And when we did an exit, we did great. And I got to tell you, partners, it's very tricky. Personalities, you know, the guy or girl you met before you had anything changes a little bit. When you start to have things could happen. I've seen a lot of great partnerships. I've seen a lot of things go sideways. So my opinion is, if you could, I personally believe if you could hire someone to do what you would have a partner to do, I would say invest the money and pay people versus having a partner, because there will be issues. There will be personality conflicts. There will be power struggles. I got very lucky with my partner at Vertec. He wanted to work in the field. I mean, literally, when we signed the LOI and the asset purchase agreement with United Technologies, he came walking out of a building in a uniform, got dirty, greasy handprint on the document as he signed it. I mean, it's, you can't make this stuff up. But, and you know what? It was great. And we, like I said, we, you know, we sold that company for a lot of money. And so in some cases, it could be the perfect marriage. But in a lot of cases, if you're going to give away equity, you know, to may it be another person or a private equity group or an investor, maybe angel investors or angel capital is the easier thing to do. I think you're better off trying to take an angel investor and hiring the talent you think you need in a partner. That's
okay.
Probably my recommendation.
So let me ask you, how did you know he was a good partner for you?
I got to tell you, I really didn't. I kind of, you know, listen, I've taken a lot of chances in my life. So, you know, and again, it's a wacky thing. Like, who would take it? Like, I had an established company. I took in a guy and I said, well, if we're going to be partners, it's 50-50. Like, period. Like, I could have done, you know, 1% equity, you know, every year. You'd have to work here for 50 years to become 50-50, right? But
right.
Now, I'm like an all-in guy. I don't know You know, I'm one of them guys, maybe do as I say, not as I do type thing, because, you know, I just take my chances. I think I'm a good people person, and I could assess people well. And I knew that, you know, he was a good man, you know, married with kids, trying to, you know, he worked hard every day, and he was great at his job. And I just said, you know what, this is someone that I could see. If it goes good, we're going to do good. And you never know. You know, it's when you have more, you have more problems with partners. When everybody's all hungry and you're not making money and you're dug in and you're starting something from the ground up, people don't have time or energy to really, you know, have issues. When you start to make money, you know, and, you know, you're finally there and your accountant says, oh, my God, you guys should go maybe buy a vehicle this year because, you know, you're just going to pay it in taxes or something. And, you know, one guy gets a Porsche and the other guy gets a Tahoe. You know, you start to look at each other. And then the other guy's wife could be like, hey, why has he got a Porsche? You got it. Like, you know, like,
right.
I got to tell you, partners, they're – I've been very lucky. At my car wash, I had a partner. Guy was amazing. I would never have been able to build that business without him the way it was. So could you get lucky? Yes. You do. If there is, once you got personalities involved and families involved, I have seen a lot of things where I say you're better off spending the money and hiring the people to do what you think you need a partner.
Right. Tell me why your car wash partner was so valuable. You said you couldn't have been able to build it without him. Why is that? Why was he so valuable?
Yeah, so he was another guy, again, another entrepreneur. He was a guy who owned an elevator company as well, and he built a car wash. And I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. Well, lo and behold, you know, I'm on my no-compete. And one of my zoning attorneys said to me, oh, there's a property over here that has a car wash use permit. Because I said, you know, I got to find something to do that I don't break my no-compete. Because I'm an elevator guy. Like, you know, that's my whole life. So what else am I going to do, right? So I had to stay out of trouble. So funny enough, I looked at the deal, and I didn't know anything about car washes. So what I did was I took all the plans, and I sent it to my friend Eric, who was my partner. And I said, I'm thinking about building this car wash. What do you think of it, and would you do it? And he goes, he had the plans and everything for about a week and a half. He calls me back, and he says, I'll give you $500,000 right now. Just sell me the deal. And I said, well, I think I want to build this thing. He goes, how about a partner? He goes, and I said, well, I like building things. And he says to me, I got an idea. You could knock down the building, build the building, and I'll do all the stuff with the car wash inside. Because we put a giant conveyor belt inside, you know, really fancy high-end car wash. And I said, you know what? Let's do it. We'll invest side by side. You know, if I put in 50 grand, you put in 50, whatever it is. And we did that the whole way through. We got this thing up and running. We worked there. I was washing cars by hand when it opened, you know, and we did that and we got it running and the thing was great, but I didn't know anything about car washes. I didn't know anything about the business at all. I just found out about a property that had a use permit and kind of made it happen. So, you know,
right.
In cases like that, that's a valuable partner. And, you know, so I think every situation is different and specific to its own needs. And I do, let me tell you, partners that go the distance and build great things, you know, I really give accolades to those people because it does take a lot of massaging. You have to have patience. You have to be, you know, sometimes you got to bite your tongue. Sometimes you can't be overreactive. There's a lot of, once you have the word personality involved in any kind of business, that's where you got to, and that goes right down to the employees. You know, if you're, if you're not really vested in being committed to whoever you're working with, if it's a partner or an employee, you're headed for problems. And that's just, you know, those are the little tidbits that I firmly believe are what makes things successful. Because in the elevator business, I'm buying the same parts that my competitors are. I have the same labor rate my competitors do. So I get asked all the time when I go to board meetings and they're vetting companies, what makes you different than any other five elevator companies that are bidding? And I tell them, I say, we have a team and a culture that are second to none, and we communicate with the customers. And one time I took a box of 1,000 business cards and I put them on a table. There was about 40 people in a room at a boardroom. And I said to them, you know what? Here's 1,000 business cards with my only cell phone number on it. You guys could take these. You could give them to everybody in all of the buildings. You could photocopy them and email them to everybody that lives in the buildings. I said, that's my commitment. If something's wrong and you don't like it, send it to me. I know where in my company to get it fixed. And my company, when I did that right there, what I just said, my company was 2.5 years old, and I got a $44 million modernization for Co-op City.
Wow.
2.5-year-old company. So these are the things that, you know, you got to be committed. And a partnership is a huge commitment. It's as committed as being married in some cases. And I will say this, I definitely saw my partner in Vertec more than I saw my wife that 17-year period.
Wow.
Yeah, it sounds crazy, but it's true. And, you know, it's a marriage.
Wow, I can see that.
Well, they say it's your work wife or work husband, right?
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Very true.
There's something else that I hear in the things that you're saying. So, you know, I do a lot of work advisory, executive coaching with CEOs of middle market companies. And one of the things that I discuss with them is their stakeholders. So as, you know, as you as a founder, I mean, you have a multifaceted job, right? So you have to protect your employees and make sure they have all the resources they need to do their job. You have to also protect your clients. You don't want to price gouge them, and you don't want your employees to abuse your clients, nor do you want your clients to abuse your employees. And then you have vendors, right? So you have to take care of them. So those are all stakeholders, and you have the media and government, and, you know, there are all kinds of other stakeholders. But what I hear from you is you go the step that I discuss with my clients. I say your employees are stakeholders, your clients, your vendors, the media, all of that. But your employees have families. They have a spouse. They have children. And they want their children to have the best life and go to school and make sure, just like you want to make sure your employees have all the resources, they want to make sure their family is safe and they have all the resources to live a great life. And that's what I hear from you, is that you're a guy who's looking, you take care of your stakeholders, and then you go that step beyond. You make sure your stakeholders can take care of the stakeholders in their life, the people who they care about. That sounds like that's something that differentiates you, because everyone says, oh, your employees are your most valuable asset, but it sounds like you actually live that, or am I just misreading you?
Yeah, no, so I got to tell you, so the things, like, it's the funny things that really drive me, you know, and back, this kind of goes back to the Vertec days. One of my biggest problems I had, so funny enough, you say partners, the first argument I ever had with my partner was when an invoice came in, I paid that invoice that day. And he would be like, why wouldn't you wait the 15 days, like, you know, to pay him? And I was like, oh, let's just do it. And, you know, so you know, I say to myself, when it comes to families, what I used to, it's so funny, but I had, there was a point with Vertec where literally I probably had 30 or 40 loans out to my employees. Oh, Bobby wants a new car, but he doesn't have the down payment. Okay, Bobby, no problem. Oh, Jimmy's getting married, needs part of the wedding. Oh, no problem. Oh, you need a deposit for the house. Oh, here's the, I'm telling you, I was doing that. And my first time I ever hired a CFO, he seen the schedule, and he was like, this is got to end right now. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, no, that's crazy. And it was crazy. Listen, you know, people don't make the payment to pay it. It was ridiculous. But you know what? It made me feel so good when, you know, that guy would pull up with the new car, or someone would show you a picture of their new house, or, hey, this was my kid's wedding that, you know, you gave me the money for. And I got to tell you, you're not just, like you said, these people all have vested interests, and there is a vested interest that goes beyond what you even see as an owner. And you got to think about that. Like, I realized that all the people that came to work for me, a lot of those mechanics, they went home to their wife and said, hey, I'm going to quit my job at a great company, big company like Otis, and I'm going to go work for Don. He's starting up a company again, and he has no elevators. He has nothing, but I'm going to like, do you know how that might not sit well? And, you know, you got to – I got to tell you, Mike, once somebody makes that commitment to me, I personally have to return it tenfold just to make me feel consciously responsible, because, you know, I realize it goes a lot deeper than the person you're talking to or dealing with right now, and it affects deeper. So every business has a lot of vested people that they might not even ever realize are there, but they are. And those people can make the decisions. You know, if you're not treating your people bad, you got to realize you could have an employee not treat them good. That employee might not say anything back to you because you're the boss. But when they go home and they talk to their wife or their husband, they could be like, this guy's terrible, and they hear that. And when that happens for 3 months, you know what happens? That employee takes off. You never know why. And life goes on. Like, you have to really understand what you're dealing with. Out there in the universe, for real, you know?
Well, Johnson & Johnson has a, I guess maybe their motto, what they stand for, employees first, clients second, and shareholders third. If you take care of the employees, they will take care of the clients. And if you take care of the clients, then they will take care of the shareholders.
Very true. To the fullest.
Yep. Sounds like you have the same philosophy. And I can see how you would have a corporate culture that's very unique from others. I mean, you have you've really taken the word family and incorporated it into the business world, right? So, you know, we hear so much about how in business we're trying to get people to be more machine-like, and then we're trying to get computers or machines to be more human-like, and you've put the humanness into the humanity of a business. So it's a business, you responsibly have to make money and a profit so that you can pay your people and your vendors. But there's the human element, and it seems like you have a really good grasp of that. And don't mean to throw so much at you, but I heard you say the post-integration of mergers and acquisitions is the most difficult part. And according to Harvard Business School, about 70% of M&As fail because of post-integration, the human integration of a merger or acquisition. So it sounds like you have a really good grip on that.
Yeah, we really try to. I remember, so funny enough, when I sold my company to United Technologies, we were running on our own for about a year and a half. And then they passed me to integrate Unitec and Vertec. So we took these two companies and put them together and called it Unitec Vertec. How creative. But the funny part was, I never forget, we had a brand new shop that neither company ever was in, and we all went in it the same day. And that was like a strategic thing. This way, you know, it isn't like, oh, they're becoming part of us or we're becoming part of them.
Right.
Funny enough, I'll never forget, one of their guys said to one of my guys, like you guys are the traveling team, we're the A team, or we're the home team. Don't like, and I say to myself, you can never get anywhere with that logic. Everyone has to realize that they're on the same team, and they have to treat each other like that. And it's easy to say, lip service is nothing. And even my people, like, you know, we bought like a company Genco and a company ArcTech and a company WestTech and Independence. And like, you know, everyone says, oh yeah, you know, that's an Independence job or that's an ArcTech job. No. I go, don't say that. It's our job. And what's the problem with it? We're going to treat it just the same. Every job, every employee, every customer, every vehicle, everything gets the same. And you got to – that's the mantra, because like that Harvard Business School, which, trust me, I didn't have the chance to visit, they have – so there's something to be said there. And it's like a lot of people just slap these things together. They try to synergize. They don't listen to the people that they just took on their team. And it all just is a recipe for disaster. You have to have patience, and you have to be true to building a culture. If you're just doing a pump and dump, you're dead. You're going to lose half the business. You got to buy twice as many to be successful. It's terrible.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we're coming up to the end of our show here. So two things. I'm going to give you an opportunity to give out your contact information if someone would like to, if they're interested in your business. And last words of wisdom, if you'd like to share some.
Yeah, sure. So, listen, the reality is, and I'm the biggest piece of advice I could give anyone is you could actually do anything you put your mind to, I believe. And, you know, sometimes you need a little nudge, and like me, like, look, I was forced into a career that has done amazing things for me and my family. So, but you got to believe in it. You got to be willing to work. There's, you know, one of the acquisitions that we weren't able to close, the best line the guy said to me, the only free meal is in a mousetrap. So you got to work hard. And be true to yourself and be true to other people. Treat people better than you would want to be treated yourself, and you'll be successful. And, you know, so my company information, it's Champion Elevator, you know, champion-elevator.com. We're in New York, Connecticut, New Jersey. And, you know, we're all over Facebook and LinkedIn and on the web, so anyone could just look up Champion Elevator. We're in New York, headquartered in right in Times Square. Have 7 or 8 warehouses, and you know, we're just here to help people. And I think if you want to work with a company that's going to be honest and, you know, tell you maybe some news you don't want to hear or maybe news you do want to hear, but you're going to get the real news at the real time about your elevators, and that's pretty much how we operate.
Very good.
Awesome. Don, thank you so much for being our guest tonight.
Oh, you're very welcome. Believe me, I
greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, and I love being able to share things that may inspire someone, you know, and hopefully this goes out there and, you know, something good, you know, it sparks an interest in someone to, you know, become more successful. Like, you know, I think helping each other is a big part of being successful out there. So I appreciate the opportunity to do this.
No, it's been
and
our
we
pleasure.
Appreciate
it's been
the
pleasure.
Wisdom, for sure.
Yep.
Thanks.
It's been a pleasure getting to know you. You have a great story, and thank you for being so transparent and talking about, you know, the ups and downs, pun intended, for your business, right? So we appreciate that.
Great. Well, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thank
a great
you very
week,
much.
Everyone. And
you too.
We'll see you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.